Did you know that Islam played a large part in shaping America? Today on Living with Joy with Phil Waltrip, Dr. William Federer discusses how Islam affected the discovery and laws of America, and how it's affecting American politics today, and how America's relationship with Islamic countries is dangerous. Welcome to Living with Joy with Phil Waltrip, a daily program dedicated to help you live the Christian life to the fullest. Now, here's our host, author, speaker, and conference leader, Phil Waltrip.
There are some programs we do on Living with Joy with Phil Waltrip that just seem to resonate with our listeners. I need to tell you that the program that we did Monday and the program yesterday and the program today certainly fits that category, because some of you have found yourself absolutely in amazement at what you have heard, information that the mainstream media has not told you, things you didn't learn in history. Maybe your teacher just accidentally avoided the subject, or maybe they intentionally avoided the subject. Well, I think many cases, the teachers didn't know themselves. And that is the discussion of how did Islam affect and shape the United States in its early days? How has it affected us throughout our history, and how is it affecting us today? As a matter of fact, there is so much information today about Islam that, quite frankly, is just false. And as you will hear today on our broadcast, it's actually part of their strategy to deceive you and to even lie if necessary. Many times they say, we're for peace, but when they get in control, they destroy their enemies and they become people of violence. So today you're going to learn quite a bit about Islam and the Quran that you probably did not know. We've been thrilled this week to have with us a dear friend, Dr. William Federer. Dr. Federer is one of our listener favorites, and this week, as I said, is no exception. He is a best-selling author, he's a nationally known speaker, and he's the president of Amerisearch, which is a publishing company dedicated to researching America's heritage. Well, this week, Bill has been sharing some fascinating information, and much of it is contained in a wonderful book he has written entitled What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. There is, as I said earlier, so much information about Islam and Muslims that we've never heard about, and the mainstream media and culture preaches tolerance and peace, but at the roots of Islam is a great threat to the Christians and to the United States of America that must not be ignored. Well, Dr. Federer is a wonderful scholar indeed. He's been a former congressional candidate. He is someone who's very articulate, well-read, well-researched, as you will see today. I want you to listen, because we're going to share with you the conclusion of this interview with Dr. William Federer today on Living with Joy with Phil Waltrip. And I want to tell you, because I want you at the close of the broadcast to be sure to have a pencil handy if you can, because I'm going to tell you how you can get an audio CD of this interview in its entirety, not just today, but the one we had with Dr. Federer that lasted over 45 or 50 minutes. You can get it in its entirety, along with a copy of the book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam and the United States. It's a book that you want. You'll want it for your kids, for your grandkids. It's a wonderful resource. You will not throw it away, I promise. It is something you'll keep for a long, long time. But I want you to listen as we conclude this interview about the Quran and Islam, especially how it affected the United States and continues to affect us today. Our guest, Dr. William Federer, joins me now as we conclude this interview about how Islam is affecting us, and many times we don't know it. I want you to say that again, what you just said. How much of our taxpayer money is going to build mosques?
$700 million is what our State Department has spent to refurbish old historic mosques from Cairo to Africa. And this is, they're saying, oh, we're building relationships with the Muslim world. It's like, okay, how many taxpayers are out there struggling, and how many taxpayers does it take to make $700 million and to have this just fly out the window to building mosques? There's lots of churches that could use some of that money too. So we see that the president has taken an attitude of, if, again, the question is, if you were a moderate Muslim and you saw this stuff happening by America, who still is the most Christian country in the world, Pew Religious Landscape Survey said 78% of Americans in 2008 identify themselves as Christian. 78%, 52% Protestant, 25% Catholic, and, you know, 2% Mormon, 2% Jewish, 0.5% Hindu, 0.5% Buddhist, you know, 0.6% Muslim, 1.6% atheist, but 78% Christian. So here we have one of the most Christian countries in the world spending its money to build mosques. If you were a moderate Muslim, what would you think? You'd think, man, maybe the world is actually submitting to Allah now rather than later. And they gravitate from the future, peaceful, moderate camp into the fundamental now camp, which is the violent camp. So we're actually creating a bigger problem than we're solving.
Why do you think people are attracted to Islam? I mean, why are there people who generally are non-religious, especially in foreign countries, but even in America? Why is Islam so attracted to those people?
Several reasons. One, it's the religion of works. And we know that all religions play upon man as a fallen person, and we feel like that we need to do things to make ourselves acceptable to God. Christianity is unique, and it says, yes, you're a fallen creature. Jesus did the thing to make you acceptable to God, and you receive it by faith, and then out of thanksgiving, you want to do good works. You're not earning your salvation by those good works. But Islam is the ultimate religion of works, and so it plays upon that. Also, it's unique in that most other major religions have this concept that your flesh is bad. You see pictures of these Hindus, fasting and breaking themselves into walls, denying their flesh because their flesh is bad. Buddhist idea of karma, what goes around comes around. You want to be nice to people because it's going to come around, and you want to try not to be evil to the people. And ultimately Christianity with Apostle Paul, Romans 7, saying, there's a battle going on inside me. I want to do good, but my flesh is trying to do bad. What am I going to do? Well, Jesus will save me from this situation by getting you born again, filling you with the Holy Spirit, will give you the strength not to give in to the evil. Islam has within it the ability to fulfill all of the fleshly desires. And what do I mean by that? Muhammad allowed his men to have four wives, plus as many as their right hand possesses, as many as they take in battle. And so one of the strongest drives in men is lust, right? And so you go up to these young guys and say, hey, if you join this, you get to have lots of women, and if you die, you'll go to paradise and get 72 women. I mean, where do most suicide bombers frequent the night before their attack? Strip clubs, right? And so there's this lustful motivation inside of the religion, whereas the other religions say this is bad, put it down. Pride is a religion of pride. They call it honor, but it's pride. I mean, they'll kill their own daughter if she embarrasses them. But so it's a religion of pride. There's lying. You get to lie to advance Islam. It's called taqiyya, sacred lying. So whereas Christianity and Judaism says, nope, don't lie, don't bear fault, Islam allows you within the religion to lie. Lie, cheat, steal, and everything. And so Muhammad just tells you when it's okay to lie, when it's not okay to lie. When it's okay to cheat, when it's not okay to cheat. When it's okay to murder, when it's not okay to murder. When it's okay to rape, when it's not okay to rape. So what Muhammad permitted is permitted, that's called halal. And what Muhammad did not permit is not permitted, that's called haram. And all of Sharia law is based on halal and haram. What's permitted, what's not permitted, it's all based on Muhammad's life. He's the perfect Muslim. And there's no fallen redemption theme. There's no, I sinned, I got to ask God to forgive me, cleanse me with the blood of the lamb, the Old Testament, you have all these laws and all the sacrifices for when you break the laws. But there is no fallen redemption theme in Islam. It's just obedience, and you never know if you've obeyed enough. Even Muhammad said, I don't know what Allah will do with me. So it's a religion of works, but how do you know how to do the work? Well, they say that Muhammad's life was the blueprint, the sunnah, the example, the way. And so it's all based on his preferences of what he permitted and didn't permit.
We're talking to Dr. William Federer, who is the author of a book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. I want you to bring us up to date a little bit. Give us a synopsis of what has been America's relationship with Islamic countries from the beginning of our nation. How has our leaders in the past, in the early days, and when our country was still young, all the way through kind of what I call the maturing years. What was our relationship with those Islamic countries, and how has those type relationships changed in the last few years?
Well, this is fascinating, Phil. I mentioned the first wave of Islamic expansion, which was Arabic, and it went from Arabia to Paris. Then there's the second wave of Islamic expansion, the Turks, the Mongolian Turks. Genghis Khan, Mongol, kills 30 million people, conquers from Korea to Hungary, right? Well, one of the Mongolian descendants, the Turks, convert to Islam. And this is the second wave. They invade the Holy Land again, and then they invade the Byzantine Empire, which is today Turkey. But back then, the Byzantine Empire was all Christian. This is where John spoke and Paul spoke and Ephesus and Galatia and Colossae. All seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were all in Asia Minor, and they were all eventually conquered by the Muslims. Well, now, the Asia Minor, the Byzantine Empire, didn't go down easy. They cried to the West for help, and the West sent help. It was called the Crusades. So people say, well, the Crusades were bad. Wait a second. The Crusades were the Byzantine church and the emperor swallowing his pride because he thought he was the true Christian leader. I mean, they spoke Greek, the language of the New Testament. They viewed the Latin Catholic West as the church split. So this was begging the church split for help. And the church split sends help, the Crusades. Pope Urban II, 1097 was the first crusade. They had nine major crusades in 200 years. Richard the Lionheart led the third crusade. You know, left his brother King John in charge of England, Robin Hood, Sherwood Forest, right? And I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. St. Louis was King Louis IX, the King of France. He led the 7th and 8th Crusades. He actually went into Egypt to try to rescue those Coptic Christians and won several battles, but then the Muslims lured him further in, and it was flooding, and they broke the dikes of the Nile, and it flooded his army. But when the Crusades fizzled is when the Muslims captured Constantinople. And your question is, how does this affect America? Well, when Constantinople fell to the Muslims in the year 1453, this ended land trade between Western Europe and India and China. I mean, since Roman times, Europeans traded with India and China. They had the Parthian Empire, which was Persia, the Bactrian Empire, Kushan Empire, which was India, and then the Han Empire, which was China. And they had the China Silk Road, the Gobi Desert, and the teas, dyes, and spices, and so forth. And so Marco Polo in 1271 went from Venice, Italy, to China. And when the Muslims attacked the caravans, attacked the trade routes, finally they sacked Constantinople in the year 1453. All land trade was ended. And then the Europeans began to look for alternative routes. And finally, in 1492, Columbus said, I know a shortcut to India and China, sail west. He runs into some islands, thinks he's around India, names the inhabitants the Indians. We would not call Native Americans Indians if it wasn't for jihad. In other words, Columbus would have never set sail over here had it not been for the Muslims conquering Constantinople and the trade routes over there. So that's the first instance of Islam having an impact on America. And then slavery. I mentioned how the Muslims enslaved over 180 million Africans, but they also enslaved over a million Europeans. They would capture them from fishing villages and ships and take them to Africa. There were entire Catholic orders, the Trinitarians. The head of the order was called the Ransomer. And they would go under a white flag and try to get your friend back from North Africa, Tripoli, Tunis, Tunisia. And the Muslims captured one of the pilgrim ships. In 1625, the pilgrims send a ship with 800 pounds of beaver skins back to England to trade, and William Bradford writes in the History of the Plymouth Settlement that the ship was in the English Channel within sight of Plymouth when a Turkish man of war captured it, took it to Morocco, sold the crew into slavery. The Muslims captured an entire Irish village, the stolen village of Baltimore, Ireland. Only two ever made it back. They captured 400 from Reykjavik, Iceland, and took them to Morocco, sold them into slavery. Finally, the European powers decided they would pay an annual tribute to these Muslim pirates. Denmark, Sweden, you know, Holland, England would pay millions of dollars to these Muslim pirates. And then America breaks from Britain. And the Muslim pirates of Morocco say, oh, you're your own country now. Well, congratulations, pay your own tribute. And so they began to capture American ships, the Polly, the Marie, in 1785, stick them in the dungeons of Algiers. Thomas Jefferson is sent as an ambassador to Tripoli, and he meets the Muslim. Abrahaman was their ambassador, and he asked him why they were boarding defenseless ships with daggers in their teeth. And Jefferson writes to Congress. He says, the ambassador answered us that it was written in the laws of their prophet and in their Quran that all nations who should not acknowledge Islam's authority were sinners, and it was their duty to take them captive and make them slaves. Anyway, Jefferson arranges for John Paul Jones, the father of the American Navy, to fight the Muslims on the Black Sea for Catherine the Great of Russia to get the Crimea back. Then Jefferson becomes the third president, and he sends in our Marines. And the Muslims are forced to sign a treaty. They break the treaty. James Madison, the fourth president, sends in our Marines again. Stephen Decatur forces them to sign a treaty. The Muslim Dey of Algiers said, your treaty is waste paper. Force me to sign it, but when you leave, when I get my power back, I'll fight you again. And this idea that Muhammad said, when you're weak, you make treaties until you get strong enough to disregard them. And so finally, the Dutch, together with the British, pound away in 1816 on Algiers and finally stop them. And finally, France takes over Algeria, holds it up until 1962, and that had stopped the Muslim piracy. But this was our first instance of engaging the Muslims, was the piracy, and then slavery. Again, every slave sold in America was purchased at a Muslim slave market. And so there is this idea of Islam affecting America, but it is a little different than what some of the Muslim apologists try to tell us.
That's finally fascinating that we've now moved to a time in American history where we're trying to appease, with the very nature of their own teaching is, we will conquer and destroy. So you don't think there will ever be a time when there will be a new type of Muslim that will live in peace with Christianity and with Israel and the Jewish people? You just don't see it happening.
Islam has become peaceful whenever they were defeated. One of the major ones was in the late 1800s. The West had developed artillery, and different kingdoms broke away from the Ottoman Empire. Parts of Poland, Hungary, Wallachia, Moldova, Albania broke away from the Ottoman Empire. And finally, after World War I, the Ottoman Empire fell apart. And France took Lebanon and Syria as protectorates. England took Palestine and Iraq as protectorates. Later gave birth to Israel out of that. America was supposed to take Armenia as a protectorate. We said no, and they killed 1.5 million Armenian Christians between 1915 and 1922. But the Muslim world viewed itself as defeated, so they became peaceful. And the West was developing airplanes, telephones, televisions, and so the Muslim leaders, they never had democracies, they always had dictators, but the dictators wanted to curry favor of the West. Send their kids to Western schools, get rid of the fezes and the burqas, and teach English in their countries. And this is the way the world was. It was moving in this direction, sort of like the Shah of Iran, who used to be very pro-American. And then a couple things happened. 1928, the Muslim Brotherhood was started in Egypt, saying that we need to get back to conquering the world for Allah. And then in 1938, oil was discovered in Saudi Arabia. Now, Egypt and Persia were Iran were the upper crust Muslim countries. Saudi Arabia was for centuries the most backwards Muslim country. No assets, mountains of useless sand, 130 degree heat and smelly camels in this Wahhabi version of cutting off arms and legs and stoning women. Well, we found oil in the most backwards Muslim country and we pumped billions of dollars, making it the richest Muslim country in one generation. And so the Muslim world said, why be like the West to be blessed by Allah? Let's be like Saudi Arabia and this Wahhabi version of violent Islam. So we paid for the exporting of this. And so as the Muslim Brotherhood and these different people would infiltrate these different countries, and they would stir for democracy. And one of the interesting ones was Iran. And Jimmy Carter had a national security advisor named Zbigniew Brzezinski. And he thought Russia was the big enemy. And so if we let Iran become a democracy, pull the rug out from under the Shah, and they'll vote in the Sharia, because whenever democracy is introduced to Muslim world, they vote in Sharia law. And so they get the Ayatollah, and it's a thorn in the side of Russia. And this was Zbigniew Brzezinski's ideas. Let it be and it did help bring Russia to USSR down. But the Muslim world began to get rid of their leaders. So we get rid of the Taliban in Afghanistan. We give them a constitution. What do? They vote in Sharia law, where it's the death penalty if you leave Islam. And then we get rid of Saddam Hussein, who we had propped up for years. We give Iraq a constitution. What do? They vote in Sharia law, where it's the death penalty if you leave Islam. You know, the Islamic Republic of Pakistan, what do they have? They have Sharia law over there. We see Turkey. It was currying favor of the West because their Ottoman Empire was destroyed. They wanted to be Western and dress in Western clothes. Well, just in 2010, they vote in Sharia leaders who arrest their military leaders, moving Turkey into this direction. And then Egypt. And when our president called Mubarak and basically pressured him to step down, and they want to have quote-unquote democracy in Egypt. Well, what happens when you have democracy in a Muslim country? Well, the majority of the people are Muslim. Guess what? They vote in Sharia law. And so Christians, Jews, non-Muslims, and women are relegated to a second-class status. In America, we associate democracy with equality. In other countries around the world, they don't have equality. There is no concept of equality in Islam. Allah loves the Muslim who is submitted, and Allah hates the infidel who is not submitted. And so democracy in Muslim countries ends up with Sharia. So we see that America, since the end of World War I, we've basically been allowing the Muslim Brotherhood and financing it through a buying of oil. We've been financing this movement of the Muslim world away from looking to us and being satellites, so to speak, and now they're moving in the direction of the Muslim Brotherhood, who want to have a caliphate. They want to have a, sort of like an EU, only it being of the Muslim world and having one Muslim leader and then eventually taking over the world.
Well, it's been a most fascinating conversation with our guest today, Dr. William Federer. He's the author of the book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. And I must say, this is one of the most fascinating books that I have ever written. It is filled with so much information, documentation, many of the things that he has shared today, and so much, much more. It is a fascinating book. You're a fascinating man that I could literally sit and talk with hours upon hours to hear you talk. And so I'm grateful for your research into not only Islam and the Quran, but just keeping us as Christians informed. And I should even broaden that to say as Americans informed, so that as we hear politicians talk and make decisions, we'll understand that they are not quite thinking the way that we Americans, and particularly we Christians, are thinking. So thank you so much, Bill, for being with us today and for sharing with us on Living with Joy.
Thank you, Phil.
I want to certainly thank Dr. William Federer for being with us this week on Living with Joy with Phil Waldrop. He has shared some amazing information with us that is essential for every American and every Christian to know about. Well, much of the information that he has shared with us Monday, yesterday, and today, plus so much more that we didn't find time to cover, is in his book entitled What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam and the United States. This book is an intriguing look at Islam, how it has affected American history in particular, and how it is continuing to affect the United States today. It is a very important resource to keep Christians in America particularly informed. It is an excellent resource for students of world history. And as I said at the beginning, if you have a child or a grandchild that is studying history, especially world history, this is a book you need to have handy, because Dr. Federer not only shares truths, but he documents it in the very historical documents that they need to quote to make their point to show that Islam really is not a friendly religion to America and to Christianity. And we'd like to send you a copy of What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States, plus an audio copy of our complete interview with William Federer, all for your donation of $25 or more to Phil Waldrop Ministries and Living with Joy. So let us hear from you today. And remember, your gifts enable us to continue sharing insightful and informative programs like you've heard today on Living with Joy with Phil Waldrop.
Many Christians are uninformed about the Muslim religion. Do you know why America should be concerned about the Islamic movement that is sweeping our country? Phil Waldrop and the staff of Living with Joy would like to send you a copy of William Federer's book, What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam and the United States, and the audio CD of his complete interview for your donation of $25 or more. To get your copy, you can visit our website, livingwithjoyradio.com. That's livingwithjoyradio.com. Or you can call us at 1-800-374-1550. You may also write to us at Living with Joy, Post Office Box 148, Trinity, Alabama 35673. You'll be fascinated by this fast-paced, objective history of the world from a perspective you have never imagined. Current events will come into focus in the backdrop of 1,400 years of inconceivable yet true events and conflicts. Again, the phone number to get your copy of William Federer's What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran and the audio CD of his interview is 1-800-374-1550. That's 1-800-374-1550. Or you can write to us at Living with Joy, Post Office Box 148, Trinity, Alabama 35673. That's Living with Joy, Post Office Box 148, Trinity, Alabama 866-285-3573. Or you can visit our website 24/7 at livingwithjoyradio.com. That's livingwithjoyradio.com. Living with Joy is a production of the Phil Waltrip Evangelistic Association in Trinity, Alabama.